When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade, they talk about the things they did that day, the land of the work of Triple H. Rewind to SmackDown, 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
Oh, the music is correct. It is time for Rewind a SmackDown with John Pollock and the number one dad, Wei Ting, joining us tonight as we go into Father's Day weekend. And I know what everyone is saying out there. Oh, man, what is a great last-minute gift? What is something I could just purchase online that is a gift that keeps on giving for my wrestling-loving father in my life? What would be a great gift idea, Wei?
Maybe the gift of a Post-Wrestling Cafe membership. All right. I know there are some of you who might be listening to this in the same car as a significant other. Maybe you are listening to this that because you also happen to be a fan of Post Wrestling. But we do offer gifting memberships now at postwrestling.com/gift. It is a great way to show the person that you love, the very special person in your life who might listen to one of these podcasts every single morning, that you know exactly what they want. And that is a cafe membership at really any amount that you choose. Could be 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe a whole year if you so wish. Postwrestling.com/gift.
It's a great gift. I could only be so lucky to get one for Father's Day. So check that out. Postwrestlingcafe.com. Also up this week, we did do our Rewind Away covering the Katsuyori Shibata California Dreamin' series that New Japan World put out back in 2018. And coming up this weekend, we have got both a New Japan Dominion review with Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. And Sunday night, for everybody here on the Post YouTube channel, it's time for the NWA podcast. And what a week it is to give the definitive truth on professional wrestling from Nate Milton, Chris from LA, Two-Way Ray, and the extended NWA podcast universe.
I'm sure a lot of thoughts about a lot of things on their minds.
So all of that can be found postwrestling.com. Don't forget to subscribe here on the channel, like the video, as we are now getting into Friday Night SmackDown from the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. And it happened, Wei. We had a WrestleTix figure of 12,245 outdoing WWE's announced 11,922, but Joe Tessitore mentioning $1 million-plus gate, the highest grossing WWE event ever in Lexington, even higher than the famed Backlash 2006, which came up on the graphics later in the show as the one pay-per-view to take place at the Rupp Arena featuring, check this, double check me on Cage Match, the one and only WWE match by God, as he teamed with Shawn Michaels against Vince and Shane McMahon.
Oh, wow. This SmackDown outdrew God.
It outdrew God, who also God put over the McMahons that night, too.
Okay, well, something tells me the next time they come back to Lexington for a pay-per-view, with or without God, they'll probably break this record.
Who's more likely to have another match in WWE or an appearance in WWE, Vince McMahon or God?
God.
Okay. We also have the game four of the Pacers Thunder game was going on tonight as well. So that was going against things. But WWE bringing out the heavy artillery on main event before the cameras started rolling for SmackDown. It is Hikuleo making his WWE debut against Kit Wilson, just as everyone had fantasy booked this arrival in WWE. His first match since June 9th of last year at last year's Dominion. The man missed an entire Dominion to Dominion cycle to come back, and he appears on main event.
He must have had one of those 365-day non-competes that he had to wait for.
He must have signed quite the restrictive contract for New Japan that J.C. Mateo, though, certainly navigated his way out from. So, yes, he made it after all this time on main event. So I would imagine it will be imminent that he is on regular television itself.
It's fascinating. We haven't really seen this sort of like debut for any sort of notable wrestler with like a history. Could be that this was just somebody they wanted to, you know, maybe eventually move to the main roster quickly, and they wanted to just like see how he appeared on camera versus debuting him on NXT, which at this point, you know, has a much higher profile than a main event, obviously. So we'll see what becomes of this. I mean, I would suggest that his proper introduction, I would hope, would be much bigger than what we'd be getting.
Well, John Cena starts the show out in his Kentucky Wildcats colors, and he brings up everyone's favorite topic, wrestling's Mount Rushmore. And no one is comparable to John Cena. His Mount Rushmore consists of John Cena, John Cena, John Cena, and John Cena. He takes up all of it. And he then goes to explain that he is smarter. And what was Dwayne's line? He was 12 steps ahead. John Cena is 1,000 steps ahead.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Pretty far ahead. He's so thinking. Far ahead that he's only now retconning his heel turn to give us an explanation of why he turned heel. So he explains, I announced my retirement a year ago so that I could scout everyone for 6 months. Then I knew how to take advantage of the Royal Rumble and the Elimination Chamber. I guess he needed 6 months to get familiar with these concepts that they've been doing yearly. So he explains that he was able to use the fact that Punk and Rollins were going to be coming to blows, they would eliminate one another they would take care of each other in the Rumble and the Chamber. Cody is too busy with Roman Reigns. The final boss, yes. So, yes, that would apply to...
You're having a bit of a tough time recapping, and I don't blame you, John, because this was a very...
I had to rewatch this
convoluted
way.
Explanation.
So I was like, none of this adds up, but he says it so defiantly, like you couldn't possibly argue with this logic, and I have... Then he says, I beat Randy in his hometown, I put R-Truth in the main event...
Which he did not.
There's been no main event with R-Truth yet.
I mean,
maybe in Grand Rapids, Michigan next week. Maybe he will get that elusive main event next week.
I suppose since it was a Saturday night's main event, every match on it was technically a main event.
Okay, sure. Yeah. He could have at least said, you know, we were in the highest performing quarter. So he says that while everyone was paying attention to R-Truth, I aligned with Logan Paul, and this distraction allowed me to size up CM Punk, backing him into a corner for a title shot so that Punk has to admit he's a hypocrite. And I will beat CM Punk, and I don't have to worry about Seth Rollins because Rollins will never cash in on me because he wants me to leave with this title so that Rollins can be the only champion left.
Mm.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
You know, so, you know what I was thinking during this segment, Way?
What's that?
Whole part of the show, man.
This promo was basically that. It was Dwayne explaining, sit down, shut up, I have a plan, even though clearly there was no plan for any of this. You know, but Cena can get by with this sort of like ridiculous logic because he's a heel, and heel logic isn't necessarily supposed to match up perfectly. But he basically just like did a recap telling us what he did, except he's adding, I planned that. I planned that 6 months ahead. I planned that. I knew you guys were going to be fixated on R-Truth. That's why I teamed with Logan Paul. Even though I didn't know CM Punk was going to challenge me next, but I was teaming with Logan Paul just so I could prep to watch, to prep for CM Punk. Whatever. It's fine. It was like, for a heel, we're supposed to poke holes at it, aren't we?
While you've been busy using your pathetic brains to make fake stories, if I sold my soul, I put the math in my favor. Because I win the match before the match even begins. And I don't need your appreciation. You're not going to realize my greatness until 3 years after I'm gone. You are simply a mathematical equation. And the math says there will be no one ever that is worthy of holding this title again.
Mm. Whatever. Like, I mean, listen, I appreciate
A plus delivery, I will say. Like, he said it in a... It was a very good heel promo. If we have to break this down, your brains will break.
Yeah. I mean, I did appreciate the at least attempt at doing something different with what is essentially a cocky heel promo. Him trying to use math to explain all of his steps from January till now. If you think too hard about it, it doesn't really work, but otherwise it sounds really cool and it's somewhat memorable than the typical, at this point, even John Cena heel promo. Perhaps most notable is Cena calling Punk hypocrite, which I think even more blatantly lines out what much of the conversation was following the Saudi Arabia announcement.
Yeah, it seems that everyone but John Cena does not want to like touch this, but mm-hmm. Cena, like, we have the setup promo on Raw. If there was any confusion, he allowed his Instagram to say what he couldn't in that promo by posting a photo of The Miz in Saudi Arabia with Samoa Joe. And then right out here, I am making him into a hypocrite by going to Saudi Arabia. And not really, we'll get into it later when Punk appears on the show, not like Punk had any kind of rebuttal to any of that aspect of the story, because there really isn't one.
Punk kind of teed it up like he was about to, but never really got there. And we'll talk about that promo a bit later.
So Cody interrupts Cena, and Cody calls Cena a genius. Everything you've planned has come true. But what part of your master plan was you staring up at the lights on Saturday when I pinned you? Which feels like was totally forgotten after Money in the Bank on
because of
Saturday.
R-Truth.
There, like, that was the dominant subject coming out of Money in the Bank, but
you
it should
see,
be a
John
big deal.
Cena
that-
let Cody pin him just so he could get a closer look at R-Truth, who he knew was about to attack him. All of these R-Truth attacks are just part of Cena's plan.
Well, Cody says, I'm not part of your plan. You're part of mine. And he asks where this leaves the two of them. And before Cena can answer, Randy Orton is back for his first appearance since Backlash. And he says he's going to go through anyone to win the King of the Ring and be King Randall, even if it's Cody, who he explains, I love you like a brother, but I won't hesitate to beat you. LA Knight is out next, and he says none of them want him out here. And he says the three of you are the WWE establishment, and I stick out like a sore thumb, and I'm going to take what's mine, as he points to Cena's belt in the least convincing threat to his title, and calls Cena a genius balding bitch. So Cena just walks out on this, and that's when R-Truth returns attacking Cena. And this was interesting because there were some references to Ron Killings, but predominantly he was called R-Truth all night. Mm-hmm. And when they teed up his match for next week, the graphic read R-Truth. So I found that part to be interesting too.
It is interesting. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we saw the t-shirt. The store was billing him as Ron Killings. He came out, did that big promo introducing himself as Ron Killings, and R-Truth is kind of behind him. But on this show, you had the commentators repeatedly calling him R-Truth first. And then it's almost like R-Truth.
Respect his name, Ron Killings, is right. How Joe Tessitore kept calling him too. So it almost
they're doing
feels
both.
Like-
they're doing both, but they're still promoting him as R-Truth, and that could be due to maybe they just feel more people know R-Truth.
They also want these chants, I think, as well, to continue. And yeah. Punk's promo was all built around truth and eliciting that chant, that I think that's an aspect to it as well, as I think they want these truth chants as well. But
rather than killings. Yeah, that might not play out so well. How much of it do you think is them wanting to continue to force an IP they own as, you know, something that they're promoting rather than something that clearly somebody, this guy will leave with?
Well, there's probably something in the middle of all of that too, but it was, I won't say it was like confusing, but it was a little odd that it just felt like they were going back and forth as though like they were undecided on what this guy is going to be. And coming off that promo on Monday, it was almost like they were disregarding his promo entirely, where he said, "I'm no longer R-Truth." Mm-hmm. But when the announcers are calling him that, it's almost like they're just disregarding him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, "We worked together, we did a good job."
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
They're going to do a SummerSlam press conference at Fanatics Fest next weekend. And Cena is shown screaming at Nick Aldis in the back after the attack by R-Truth. And we go to our first of four tournament matches for the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments. Randy Orton, LA Knight, Carmelo Hayes, and Aleister Black. Black hits a moonsault off of the turnbuckle to Hayes on the floor. That sets up our first commercial break. Carmelo Hayes, who I thought looked very good in this match, and this was like another really well laid out four-way match that's kind of been the trend of these tournaments. Orton would drop Black onto the desk, and then Black comes back, posting Orton, and Hayes stops a superplex, hits a splash to Knight off the top, and it's Black making the save. So we get all the numerous saves, but my unintentional highlight of this match, Aleister Black goes for a running boot, and he's supposed to miss LA Knight and connect with Randy Orton, and doesn't get all of it, but enough that he connects with Randy. But it's not enough that it feels like the guy should be too wounded by this errant boot to the chest. So Randy, the veteran here, just thinking on his feet, decides, how can I sell this? So he staggers and he swings into the air like this air punch and takes the most comical back bump and just lays there. And if you missed this, by all means, go back and watch this because it was amazing. This was so funny. He just swings and takes a back bump like the wind just knocked him off his feet. And he lay there for like a minute.
I'll have to go back and check it.
It was amazing. So there's a blunt force trauma to Black. Hayes stops the cover. And then as L.A. Knight goes for his leaping elbow, Bronson Reed arrives, yanking him off the top. And Bron Breakker spears him. And of course, there are no DQs in these matches. So Hayes goes for a splash off the top right into an RKO as he comes down splashing Knight. Hayes falls to the floor and Orton pins LA Knight in 16 minutes and 13 seconds. And Randy, who's just having the time of his life, winces at his shoulder as the referee goes to lift. He's like, ah. And then he just laughs and puts the arm up. It's like, I'm fine. I'm just joking. This guy is on, I don't know. He's just operating on a different level. This guy's just having the time of his life is what this guy feels like.
Yeah, he really is. I thought the match was excellent. Very fast paced, a lot of very creative spots involving multiple people, as you would come to expect from these matches.
I thought a very good showcase with Carmelo Hayes, like, for, you know, he looked very good in this match. You had Orton that so much of it was built around. Yeah, like all four. This one worked out really well.
I thought Black looked really great too, you know. They didn't have to involve him in the finish here, and so I felt like they were trying to offer him some level of protection. But man, like, even a Carmelo Hayes taking this like amazing RKO finish, I don't think it really hurts him any. Anytime you get to see one of these like midair RKOs, it feels like you're seeing something special. And I think the key to the finish was the director keeping Orton out of view so well. So it turned out really well, beginning to end, but especially with that finish. So we're getting Sammy versus Orton in our semifinal.
And that's next Friday. Jacob Fatu comes out and they replay his attack on Solo Sikoa at Money in the Bank, and he states that just because you're family doesn't mean you can go behind my back and snake him. And he has to remind Sikoa that it's him against the world. So Sikoa appears on the screen. I couldn't understand anything he was saying because we had a Kato here in the background, JC Kato, and I didn't know if this guy was like auditioning for like a Daft Punk video or what this look was, but he's come a long way from JC Mateo in the black shirt and black pants.
He's experimenting, trying a new look every week. And I mean, this week, are these sunglasses? What are these?
I think that's the attempt.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
Can he see? That's the question.
But I guess I would say notably, there seems to be a big empty spot on the other side of Solo Sikoa. So it makes you wonder if we're going to get maybe a new Tongan sooner than later.
Maybe a main eventer.
Maybe. All right. Yeah.
So he says that Jacob was nothing when he found him in Sacramento last year, made him a champion, a success. It's all because of me. Next week, I'll be in that ring with open arms, willing to take you back, but you must say four words. I love you, Solo. I brought you into this world. I can take you out of it. So we will either get a hug or a murder in Grand Rapids, Michigan next week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, might get more than one killings on that show. Aldis meets with Piper Niven and Elba Fire with Chelsea Green on FaceTime, who has to postpone her Queen of the Ring match. So Aldis says, no, we're not going to do that. You're replaced by Elba Fire. And Vega walks in, hangs up on her, and Vega cuts a promo wanting Julia, who is not here tonight, so she is going to have her in a face-to-face next week. It's time to bust out a face-to-face. And Vega calls herself the smallest girl with the biggest mouth who will make you look stupid. So just a reminder that she's small.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot
to get that in there. The fact that Chelsea was announced for Queen of the Ring and then was taken out of this match, does it make you think something about the injury?
Well, it's what I thought. She has not wrestled a match since Saturday night's main event, and maybe that could be the case that they didn't want her. They thought it would be healed by now. It could have been something separate, but that was my thinking, is that maybe she just wasn't cleared in time for a match, or they just didn't want her, and if she wasn't 100% yet. Because there wasn't really a purpose to Alba Fire being in this match, other than it felt like this was a legit replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Jade Cargill, Meechan, Piper Niven, and Nia Jax is our next qualifier. And they note that Nia did eliminate Jade from the Queen of the Ring last year en route to winning the tournament. Meechan hit an acai moonsault early on, and then Jax and Niven worked together. But wouldn't you know it, in one of these matches, they eventually came to blows when they couldn't work together any longer. Meechan hits a Rana to Jax from the top, then does a headlock and kicks off the turnbuckle into a bulldog, which was identified as a tornado DDT. It was not. Meechan then hit an acai DDT onto Niven, and Jax and Niven throw Jade Cargill into Wade Barrett, who I thought they killed. And then Niven and Jax paying homage to one of their favorite tag teams, Chronic, executed high times onto Meechan. Jackson drills Niven, goes for the annihilator to Meechan, but Niven stops it. Niven puts Jack through the barricade, and this woke up the crowd, and then hits the Piper bomb to Meechan, and Jade comes back from the dead under Wade's desk and hits Jaded onto Piper in 12 minutes and 50 seconds, setting up Jade Cargill and Roxanne Perez.
I thought it was a well-designed match. You know, I thought it really worked having Piper and Nia in the match, pairing them together as a threat against Jade Cargill. It made for like a really easy to understand dynamic, making Jade the underdog. And when Nia and Piper went at it, I was actually pretty entertained by that too. You know, like two like of the larger members of the roster being able to like be very physical together, giving us like a bit of a sort of meat match between those two, I thought was a lot of fun. And they gave us some pretty big spots here with the table throw and then that barricade break. So I was actually quite entertained. I thought it delivered.
Naomi came out with the briefcase. Some of you are looking real surprised, real stupid. And she said she did what she said she would do. Tiffany Stratton prevented me from winning the title from Nia Jax constantly last year with this briefcase, and it's going to feel great to clock Tiffany in the head and take her title. And Stratton comes out. There was no mention of her now legendary opening pitch thrown at the Mets game this week. Did you see this?
I actually did not.
Ooh. Go to, if no. You type in Tiffany Stratton on Google, it got covered everywhere. Oh. This was not one for the highlight reel, let's just say.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this was a... This would be my fear of like throwing out a first pitch. I would just be too nervous about this happening.
And, I'm gonna watch it now.
Yeah, let's see Wei's reaction in real time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, he hit a camera.
Yeah, she hit a cameraman.
Oh, so, no. Well, she found the right profession.
Yeah, there was a where was Bob Uecker to call that pitch?
Oh my God,
just a bit outside. Mm. So Naomi continues. Stratton's out and dares Naomi to cash in and do it now. Well, just like the old Naomi, you're all talk, no action. And Naomi is seething and says, do I look stupid? Do I look like Boo Boo the Fool? And she says, tick tock, Tiffany, because your time is coming up. So proceed with caution.
Yeah. Listen, I'm loving the new Naomi. I think she's, I'm excited to see her with this Money in the Bank run. I think the evil laughing is, I don't know if it's necessary. Maybe some people find it part of like the fun character, but to me, like what attracted me to her was her feeling real, like shedding tears because she, you know, like she truly believes that like she was being neglected by Bianca Belair in favor of Jade Cargill. Then like to just kind of add this like evil laughter. And I also feel like a pretty forced, like repeating of the catchphrase over and over to me takes it down a little bit. Maybe I'm alone on that.
I do feel like there is some of that to it. I also felt like during this segment that there is a time that the audience will just switch these two, because I just see Naomi getting so much support from the audience. And in these segments, Stratton comes off so much as just a natural heel, as much as this babyface run has gone for her. I just hope Naomi can stay in this role, because I think she's great in the heel role, but it's one that I think the audience just naturally likes Naomi, and especially when she's positioned opposite of Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah, it could be. But I mean, I also don't know if I necessarily see a match between these two. We could just be the cash in, and then like we move these two on from each other, you know? I mean, I'm sure eventually we will get to a rematch or something like that. But to do the title change, I Naomi definitely does feel like the worthy successor to Tiffany Stratton's reign.
So this is like 20 minutes later. Nia Jax has been out by the timekeeper's area since the last match, and she emerges during this segment and goes after Stratton, ending it with the Annihilator, and Naomi comes back teasing the cash in, but she is stopped by Nia Jax.
Yeah. So, but you know, because it's the Money in the Bank, like we're not necessarily getting a match. Meanwhile, we still have to build up opponents for Tiffany. This could be Evolution. Could it be Night of Champions? Could be any of these shows, right?
They've got a lot of shows to build up over this next month. So, yeah, pick your match.
Yeah,
we also found out that they are going to have JC Jane defending her NXT Women's title at Evolution as well, with the winner of this Tuesday's match.
Yeah, and how many matches will they have at this PLE? I mean, if we're going by common PLE lengths, it'd only be five. So that's already several down, right?
Yeah, unless you're going to do the Grand Slam Mexico matchmaking to get everyone on this card in a select number of matches.
Maybe.
12-woman tag, a 10-woman tag.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Aldis meets with the entire tag division, and DIY are trying to get anyone but themselves to face the Wyatt Six tonight. And boy, would this be prophetic of no one wanting to face the Wyatt Six, because the Machine Guns are chosen to, quote, set the tone tonight as the veterans facing the Wyatt Six. So that takes us to the Motor City Machine Guns against Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy. So the Wyatt Six come out, and they get their usual reaction coming out. People like the song. They like the act. Then the bell rings, and a hush came over this entire arena as they had paid their $1 million+ in gate money to see this. And the Machine Guns they get on offense during the break. The ref gets distracted, so they double team and work on Saban. I wrote down here, it is so quiet. And Joe Gacy hits the upside down to both men and does some double teams, including power bombing Lumis on top of Saban. Saban would roll for a leaping DDT. And this is when this match started to have some major issues. So he rolls for this DDT that Lumis was just not ready for. So that gets messed up. This was a very rare screw-up spot that Chris Saban was a part of. And we cut to Uncle Howdy, who's looking annoyed, and this might have been his real concern. The Skull and Bones get stopped by Gacy, and then they go for your traditional high-low. But Gacy was too late on the low, so we got a high, and another guy just...
The high didn't really make contact.
Well, the low was too late, so I was paying attention to the south portion of this equation. Okay. Neither was stellar. And then after this high-low, Lumis goes on top of Saban for the cover and yells something that I'm going to charitably imagine was an expletive, and gets up from pinning Saban to look at Uncle Howdy, and Lumis yells, "Now?" And Howdy yells, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And then Lumis climbs to the top rope, and you're thinking, it's like, okay, they've already blown this six ways from Sunday. And he goes for this leg drop off the top, And at first, I'm just thinking, oh, like Saban really sold that well. But then I decided to watch it a little closer. And this dude landed on Chris Saban's head. He immediately grabs his head. Daphne LeSean counts three, and dude, she is in there so quick to check on this guy. The camera just gets as tight as it can and away from Saban, who appears to have been hurt from this finish. Dude, this was one of the worst WWE TV matches in some time. This totally fell apart. It was an awful reaction at the beginning, which to me is more so a case of this act of the Wyatt Six, at least Gacy and Loomis, that it, like, you could have heard a pin drop at a point in this match. And the last like 2 minutes of this were just a disaster.
No, this was not a great match. And I hate to pinpoint it, but I think much of it fell on Dexter Loomis here. He looked off in several parts, including all of those messy moments that you mentioned. And he clearly was very hard on himself at the end of all of this, you know, and I'm sure like he was apologizing profusely to multiple people in the back. Everybody has off nights. He unfortunately had one on one of the rare occasions where we get to see a Wyatt Six match. And I believe this is the first. Yeah, it's the first one on SmackDown after a reintroduction. So I thought this was extra important. And it's been difficult. I would say it was difficult during the initial Raw run. It's difficult now still to maintain the mystique of the Wyatts beyond just the sort of theatrical elements, you know, with the run-ins and the attacks, to have them come in to be able to execute a bell-to-bell match while still feeling like they should be these like supernatural types of like cool characters is really hard to pull off, and it requires almost a perfect performance. This was far from that. This was a very human performance in all of its sort of imperfect ways. So it was not a good night for the Wyatts, unfortunately.
No, and that's also one of the, like, just looking this up, dude, this was both Joe Gacy and Dexter Loomis's first match this year. Mm-hmm. And when you're not, like, in a normal, like, several years ago, like, this match would have probably been done many, many, many times on the road that, right, you know, you are going to at times like run into the, where it felt like there was one screw up and it just became quicksand where everything fell apart from that point forward. So, mm-hmm. A rough night here for the Wyatt Six. Cena runs into Jimmy Uso backstage and he asks, "Have you seen R-Truth?" He says, "No." "How about Ron Killings?" Jimmy hasn't seen him either. Cena says, "I'm heading to the ring. Tell him I want to meet him there." And Jimmy Uso's got quite the role going for him, doesn't he?
What is his storyline? I mean, Solo's still trying to recruit him, but now Solo is trying to recruit Jacob back into the family. So forget Jimmy.
Like, R-Truth has kind of moved on from this guy. Like, they were, you know, he was R-Truth's like sidekick, and R-Truth has kind of ascended above. And
is he even in a, he's not even in a qualifier for the Money in the Bank. Didn't even make the, King of the Ring. Didn't even make it to one of those.
No. So.
I don't think.
Yeah. No Jimmy Uso.
Okay. He is pretty lost at the moment. You know, his brother's doing really well. His wife is doing really well. Hopefully
moral support.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody needs that.
Cena comes back out. And he tells everyone to shut up. Truth crossed the line by attacking him. And he wants Truth to come out and fight. But instead, CM Punk makes the surprise appearance. And whatever you want to say about the reaction Punk has had over these last couple of days online, holy Christ, did this crowd go insane for CM Punk. Like, this...
That will never change. You could find the most vocal anti-CM Punk voice on the internet. They'll probably still get caught up once that music hits.
It was a huge reception that he got here. And he says that they have yet to reach the levels of disrespect that the two of them are capable of. And he then compares Cena to Darth Vader. And Cena is trying to find the Anakin Skywalker in there. And this was starting to sound like a Cena promo here, but he wasn't done then. He says, "Why can't you just let the people celebrate you and what you've done? Give them a happy ending." And Cena asks, "Why would I waste my time? because these people don't matter. This company doesn't matter. Basketball doesn't matter. Horse racing doesn't matter. And man, that struck a nerve, those last two. Punk says, well, then it's about to get real, as he looks into the camera to warn us, folks. This
pipe bomb is coming.
This isn't going to be just part of the show, okay? And the crowd is chanting for truth. He says, Cena could never beat me when I was at my best. And at this point, Punk seemed to legitimately just get flustered here. Oh, yeah. And is totally blanking and literally told the audience to bear with me here. There's a lot of stuff I want to get out. And this was like a rare hiccup for CM Punk mid promo. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of threw him because, you know, he did get out, like he landed this plane at the end, but it did seem to be, he had a lot of material that he was trying to process in real time.
And it's notable because we've never seen somebody as well-spoken as CM Punk even get close to this, you know, level of making a mistake. And I also wonder if like there was stuff he had to edit out because so earlier on, Cena called him a hypocrite and Punk was about to directly address that. He said something to the effect of, you tell a strong man a lie to offend him, and that's why it offends me when you call me a hypocrite. And this is when he started to get lost, because I don't know if he was about to expand on that, but he basically just never really kind of like followed up on it. And I was disappointed because I wanted to hear Punk directly address why he doesn't think he's a hypocrite.
Especially when the hypocrite line was used in the opening segment, it necessitated it.
Yes.
100%. Like you left it with Punk pretty much having no retort. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just sits
His
there.
Retort was that Cena is a liar. So him telling a lie about Punk being a hypocrite is more offensive, is how I take it. I don't know.
Cena is the weak one. He then really goes below the belt here, stating that Cena dresses like a little leaguer who struck out at T-ball. And Punk catches his own. he criticizes his own line here, saying, I sound like PG Cena with that line, whereas you sound like CM Punk threatening to leave this place with the title. But I actually did that, and I beat you. He says, I would follow you to Mars to beat you. I would go to hell to prove I'm better than you. You are the goat who I will spit roast and sacrifice to the gods of wrestling, like Terry Funk, Harley Race, Bret Hart, and Eddie Guerrero. He calls Cena a joke. You can't see me. I can see through you, and I always have. And that's the truth.
Mm. So also notable in this is that CM Punk never once mentions the name Saudi Arabia. He only refers to it as Night of Champions. He specifically says, I've beaten you in my hometown. I've beaten you in your hometown, and I'm going to beat you at Night of Champions.
You know why? Because that's going to get booed in this context with CM Punk saying that 100%.
I guess so.
It will.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it begs the question, why do we have to have CM Punk in this particular show, knowing how much reputational damage it could do to this character, right? If we have to dance around it like that. Anyway.
Do you feel after these two episodes, like, was this the best call for this?
It's hard to say what they feel is worthy of Saudi Arabia. These are the highest like paying shows.
Well, how about this? Okay, they've got their plans. They've got their limited dates with Cena. This is where this one fits in. Was it a smart strategy for the Punk character for Cena to frame it the way he did on Raw and bring that up? Whereas, yes, you were still going to get the same hypocrisy like of fans that know what the story is, but now it's on screen and it's part of this story that it forced even people that want to just ignore all that stuff have to face that because it's part of the story. And there would be many people that I don't know how much it would have too much of an effect on, but Punk is one of those characters that I think it does. Like, there is that aspect to it. And based on tonight, it feels like you're not going to get CM Punk doing any kind of ability to explain that, even if he wanted to, because this is a massive partner of yours that we are not going to create as some kind of heel in this lead up to a show in the country.
I would say it's especially, I want to say, disappointing for the CM Punk character, because he's the one who goes against what may be seen as censorship, right? When somebody is told not to say Saudi Arabia, well, he should be the first one to actually say it on screen. Here, I really got the sense he was censoring himself from not saying Saudi Arabia and instead referring it to Night of Champions, you know, purely. Listen, if they were set on having a big main event for the Saudi Arabia show, CM Punk versus John Cena is a big main event. If they're going to go through all of that, the conversation was going to happen online no matter what. So getting there via Cena, basically, like, you know, forcing Punk to get his title shot in Saudi Arabia, probably maybe a decent way of going about it. But it's the decision making to put this match in Saudi Arabia that's probably going to be the biggest factor in any reception.
Yeah, it's more so interesting. They only have, what, 2 weeks before this show. So how much more, like, I don't think this was great for Punk this week. And no. I just wonder if they acknowledge that and shy away from that aspect of, like, Cena bullying him into going to Saudi Arabia as the foundation of this match versus it's the Cena Punk rivalry being revisited and focusing on their history and that aspect to sell it.
And I also am very curious to know what the reception will be to CM Punk in Saudi Arabia.
I think, like, they'll love him. I don't think that's going to be something that...
But if the storyline is this clear to you and I, that Cena is forcing this man to go to a place he desperately does not want to go to, or at least in the past has said plenty of... Or at least had a tweet, really, just about about it not being a place that somebody should go to. Like, this is the story. So how is somebody in Saudi supposed to look at CM Punk?
I just think when they're there, I think it's Punk being there for the first time. It's a massive star. I think you can't understate the impact that has, and that you're probably going to have Punk that's going to be doing, you know,
all the various... But this is also John Cena with his last match in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And he's already going to be receiving...
First and last matches in Saudi Arabia.
Has he not had another one before? He was on a Saudi show before.
Punk?
Cena.
Well, I'm saying it's Punk's first match in Saudi Arabia. It's Cena's last match in Saudi Arabia.
Okay, yes. No, like, we're talking about a Cena that is already garnering babyface reactions. You know?
Yeah, I would be very surprised if Punk got any kind of negative reaction in Saudi Arabia, where I think they're just so receptive to the stars that come over and it's Punk there for the first time. And I really don't think they're going to hit it in such a way that they're going to.
But they have already, or at least Cena has been, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly that aspect to it. It's not the way I think they should have built
Punk
this one.
Said, I'll follow you to Mars to beat your ass. I'll follow you to hell to prove I'm better than you. Okay. And the way I took that is you have Mars, you have hell, and then I guess somewhere in between is Saudi Arabia. And I don't know if that's necessarily...
Well, he didn't directly call Saudi Arabia hell. So.
No, he didn't call it Mars either. But anyway, just grading the promo itself, it was a rare off night, in my opinion, for CM Punk. You know, I was beyond just maybe forgetting his lines, I was certainly looking for more of a dive into addressing the accusations of hypocrisy that Cena laid out in the beginning. But overall, like, the bravado and charismatic delivery is usually more than enough to carry CM Punk through, you know, one of these promos. And I thought, for the most part, it steered itself right by the end.
Yeah, this promo, you could have photoshopped an elephant next to them in terms of what was being overlooked. It's June on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are going through tons of your questions on the Ask Away Mailbag Show, and we're bringing you not one, but two editions of Rewind Away, including a review of the Katsuyori Shibata documentary, California Dreamin', covering his time as head trainer at the LA Dojo. Plus, Karen and Bruce have you covered for New Japan Dominion. Chris from LA has chosen another musical edition of Rewind Away to join Wei Ting and Nate Milton. Plus, we have extended editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown coming at you every single week, along with all of your weekly favorites. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. And then R-Truth returns yet again to jump Cena and puts him in the STF. And Cena sold this big afterwards, hobbling to the back.
And to which Punk said, "I'm sorry," in reference to the Elimination Chamber spot.
Right, with the callback to the Elimination Chamber. Saxton speaks with Alexa Bliss, who is not rattled after losing at Money in the Bank. Flair walks in stating, "There's only room for one queen in this division." And Truth is confronted by Aldis for his latest attack. Aldis says, "What do you want?" He says he wants another match with Cena. So Aldis makes it for next week. He's like, "You know what? I'm going to book in advance because I know that I'm going to need a main event next week." So John Cena's final match in Grand Rapids, Michigan against R-Truth next week.
Yeah. Okay, so this is also interesting. And that, like, it makes you wonder how much of this was that they have to just kind of fit in, because as of a week ago,
Cena was ever scheduled to wrestle in Grand Rapids. I think this is very much being forced into the schedule. And one of my speaking dates is now a wrestling.
Yeah, this is not a PLE. Like, you could argue the feud is hot enough at this point for this rematch to take place on a PLE, but they're instead choosing to put it on a TV. Something also tells me, if that is the context in which we're kind of to see this match, that this was supposed to be a talking date and now it's a wrestling date, I'm not expecting much of a match between these two.
I wouldn't have been expecting much of a match, period, no matter what event it's taking place on.
Well, how long of a match do you expect?
I mean, the last one went, what, 4 minutes or so? I think there'll be a commercial break in this one.
One commercial, okay.
One commercial break.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he'll have to wrestle through a commercial. That's still a pretty long length.
Have you watched some of these commercial breaks?
I have today. Yeah. Okay. They are brutal. There's not much wrestling going on. But listen, this is like, they've been giving R-Truth a lot more aggression, a lot more offense on Cena than we've seen them give anybody. Like, even a Cody Rhodes doesn't get that much offense on a John Cena. So what's going to happen in this match? I think it's got to start off with a very aggressive R-Truth. But how will it balance itself out, and how will John Cena win?
Well, he shouldn't be losing.
I don't think he will.
We'll see how far they go in protecting R-Truth in this match. Mm-hmm. I could tell you, if this was the Vince McMahon playbook, this would be like, this is our comeuppance, and R-Truth is losing clean to Cena.
He'd be Matt Hardy.
Yeah, he would be. And this would be, it's like, okay, you get your big pop, you get your big moment, but now we get our win over you. And it would extinguish a lot of the buzz that he had created for himself. I don't expect that to happen next week, but I don't see him winning this match. And he, quite honestly, like, Cena should not be losing in any way.
He shouldn't. But still, like, R-Truth is a hot commodity right now. How do you maintain that beyond this?
Yeah. And there is, of course, even the finish of like Punk somehow distracting to lead to a upset win. I don't like that one at all, even if it's the quick pop, but you have your ways of which you can get around this. Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, Candice LeRae, and Elba Fire. In this one we saw, so Bliss steps over Charlotte and then gets caught with a code breaker by Candice LeRae, and then we see Bliss with a running blockbuster. Flair then hits her with the natural selection. And Flair puts the figure eight onto Bliss. LeRae breaks it with a quebrada. And Elba Fire hits the gory special. That's broken up by Bliss. And as she goes for the twisted Bliss, she lands it on Elba. Flair yanks her off and boots Bliss off of the apron. Flair then spears LeRae. And it's Elba stopping the figure eight attempt and gets booted by Flair. Into the figure eight is Elba Fire when Bliss returns with Sister Abigail, and she's able to pin Candice before Elba Fire taps out to the figure eight. So Alexa Bliss, photo finish here, and wins the match to qualify, and Charlotte is SOL.
I thought it was a good finish, good rush towards the finish, but man, watching these matches between the commercial breaks on Netflix really does a big disservice to the match. The action in between was so boring.
It's almost like when you see that counter, it's just in my head. It's just like it's on pause, basically. And they know they're on pause. That's how it feels.
Yeah, clearly. And I understand like wanting to conserve, but like it was a lot worse for this match than it was for the main event.
Bliss will now face the winner of the four-way on Monday with Asuka, Raquel Rodriguez, Ivy Nile, and Stephanie Vaquet. And next week on SmackDown,
Nikki actually addressed that on Bella's podcast.
What did she say?
Well, she obviously she got a lot of shit for it. And she said that she had even went to Stephanie in the back and had tried to clarify beforehand how to pronounce it. And I guess she just got caught up and it came out like that. So,
I mean, it kind of told me she hasn't watched any WWE this year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
at least not NXT.
Well, I mean, she's been on the main roster. Like her call-up was just now, but she's been on TV for, 2 months.
That's true.
So next week on SmackDown, it's Randy Orton against Sami Zayn in one semifinal, Alexa Bliss against the winner of the four-way on Monday, and John Cena against R-Truth. So pretty strong lineup for a SmackDown. Cody runs by CM Punk and says they can't keep running away from each other forever. And they shake hands. And Punk says, we'll see who's chasing who after Night of Champions, the next international, the next large-scale international live event, as WWE used to put it on their investor calls. Cody, Nakamura, Andrade, and Damian Priest is our main event in the King of the Ring tournament. Andrade was, I guess he had a spark in him tonight. Maybe it was... the guy he beat for the IWGP Intercontinental title being part of this match in Shinsuke Nakamura 12 years ago. Maybe that was it. But Andrade hits a moonsault onto all three, setting up our first commercial break. And then he does a splash, breaking up Cody's figure four on Nakamura. Priest goes for old school, and Cody then scales to the top. And I don't know what he was going for here, but he just fell off balance, and this just kind of came to a halt. So Cody had to get the crowd back into this. He's like, I know. It's time to bring out the Slim Jim table. And out comes the table. And it's set up. Cody and Priest go to suplex Andrade, but Nakamura stops and knocks Cody through the Slim Jim table as he snaps into it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, at this point, do you think a table spot will be a weekly occurrence just because it's a mandated thing now? Rather than just something that may be organic in a match?
I think that, part of me says that it should be used sparingly, but then there's this other voice in my head that goes...
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
That makes me think we could do a table spot in every single match.
Oh, yes. All right. Is that a new one?
This is what I do all day away, so... No,
that's great. But yeah, I think we can expect this a table spot every Friday now.
Slim Jim Fridays.
We have to have one. Yeah.
Snap into it. So Cody's dead. He's on the ground. And then he comes back to life and didn't need as long as Nia Jax did as he comes back during the actual match itself. Hits a disaster kick to Andrade. Nakamura stops the crossroads. Hits the Kinshasa, but then Andrade saves, and it's Andrade with the double knees. Wade Barrett, watching this, says, look at Andrade. This recent acquisition of AAA has really fired him up. I'm like, first of all, this is a CMLL guy. I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know if he has such an affinity for AAA that I think he's, other than his... he did two matches for when he was in AEW. I don't know if that acquisition has fired him up with Philippe. So Cody hits a Cody cutter off the top to Damian Priest. And then Crossroads is delivered to Andrade. Nakamura goes for the sleeper. It's countered into the Crossroads. Rhodes wins, and he will face the winner of Monday's four-way with Jey Uso, Sheamus, Rusev, and Bronson Reed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we could be ending up with a Cody versus Orton match. We could be ending up with the Sammy versus Jay match, or obviously other combinations between the two.
Do you see Jay winning this four-way on Monday? I think it's the most interesting.
Yeah, I do. I can't see Jay losing the title and then losing. You know, him going into this final four mix, potentially, well, facing Cody and then facing Sammy, those feel like much bigger matches to me.
To me, Cody, Jay on one side, Sammy and Randy on the other. Those are really interesting, an interesting final four. Mm-hmm. You can protect Bronson Reed in these four ways. You don't have to beat him.
Yep.
Sheamus or Rusev, either one can take the
cancel
loss
each other out
in this one. And it gives Jey Uso some kind of rebound off of last week. And certainly the potential of just teasing a Sammy Jay final as well is interesting too. It doesn't have to be the final, but
I feel Jay's going to be booked strong coming off of.
I hope so. They've got something in him. I don't know how this title reign will necessarily be remembered, but he is a big star in this company and might even be somewhat alleviated away from the title at this point.
Yeah. The question is, will he be booked strong enough to beat Cody? I think that's a much bigger question. I could see him beating Sammy just to kind of further Sammy's issues that have been lurking. So, all right. I thought it was a pretty standard main event.
Yeah, I mean, you got Cody getting the win. I thought that there was more so like the second half of the show. Like, man. This audience, it was a struggle for some of them. And I don't even blame the audience. Like, these are, you know, we had four four-ways on this show. Like, there is a bit of, like, overkill with some of these four-way matches that they're doing across all of these. And it was a lot of four-ways to watch in one night. And your palate cleanser was that god-awful tag match in the middle. So, I mean, Lexington should have said, hey, we gave you over $1 million. I mean, come on.
There was a lot of star power on this one.
There was a lot of star power on the show. And I think that, like, between the Punk surprise, you had Cena, you had Cody, you had R-Truth, being on the show. Like, that's
Orton.
He's the hot character at the moment. Mm-hmm. And you got him on this show as well. So, you certainly can't say that this was like a stripped down version of SmackDown. But
I thought it was an interesting show just to continue to see how their treatment of the CM Punk Saudi Arabia issue is. I think the R-Truth,
this is your most compelling story going right now.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I mean, I think everything to do with R-Truth is also very interesting too, because clearly none of this was in the plans and unfortunately not a very good night for the Wyatts.
Yeah. Some off nights for some various performers on this show. I'm wondering if we maybe we will get the Jackie Redmond sit down with CM Punk and he's going to talk in riddles about what he can't say outright about Saudi Arabia. Maybe that's the compromise.
Maybe a pre-recorded interview would be the best way. Are you talking about the podcast that she does?
No, I was talking about when they do those digital exclusives on YouTube.
We could. Yeah.
Or maybe Punk will be accompanied by Turki Alsheikh to the ring at Night of Champions.
With Dana.
With Dana, too. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. There you go. That was SmackDown in the books. And we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel. But have you subscribed to the channel yet? Are you hitting us towards 20K? You're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Okay, so you better hit subscribe now. And we're going to be back here on this channel. We got the NWA podcast Sunday night and Wei and I returning Monday night for Raw in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where we will have our final set of four-way matches and whatever else in the road to Night of Champions in an undisclosed location overseas. So that is coming your Wei. And now we head on over to the forum.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the Wei, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.